Item number six is an area structure plan in Waverly West, West Neighborhood Area under file SP1 of 2012. In accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, this is a combined hearing, and the following item will be heard at the same time, namely, item seven, which is an application for subdivision and rezoning at Waverly West Neighborhood and Keniston Bison Southwest under file DASN 8 of 2012.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Paul McNeil. I'm with MMM Group Limited, representing the applicant, Manitoba Housing. And Misty Sklar is here with me as well as part of this application. As the clerk indicated, there are two applications tonight that are related, and I would like to seek the chairman's permission to address both items in one presentation rather than going through the area structure plan and come back. Because we're only dealing with one property owner, not a series of different property owners, the area structure plan and the DASZ are essentially the same plan. If you think of the area structure plan as being transparent to the application that's underneath it, so with your permission, I'll
can
talk about
with
both
that?
Of them.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, move on. I'll deal first with, firstly with the area structure plan and just an overview and background very briefly. Particularly since we have a new councillor on the committee. The original area of Waverly West was dealt with in a Plan Winnipeg amendment in 2005, and that was followed by an area structure plan for the whole area of Waverly West that identified seven individual neighbourhoods within the Waverly West area. As illustrated on this plan, the areas that are in the pale green are areas that were previously approved by community committee. So there have been four area neighborhood area structure plans. The three in the northern part were Manitoba Housing applications. The one in the southeast corner was LADCO's application. The darker green area to the west is the current application that's before the committee today. So that would be the fifth of the seven neighborhoods under review. We have had some consultation on this item. We had a public open house in May of this spring. We had 39 people attend, mostly local residents. There are a number of property owners and residents on some of the adjacent streets, a developer and some business owners that were there. In addition to that, we have had ongoing discussions with LADCO, which owns the land immediately to the south, with the Pembina Trail School Division regarding an appropriate location for a potential elementary school within the area, and with the various departments of the City of Winnipeg. Just a quick overview of the neighborhood. It encompasses approximately 375 acres, including the former landfill site, Fort Garry landfill site. The plan includes a 5-acre potential school site, and I'll come back and speak to that in a minute, because that combined with what LADCO is expected to propose ends up with a 10-acre school site. There's 33 acres of multiple family housing. At full build-out, the area is projected to have a population of about 4,500 to 5,000 residents, and we are anticipating a build-out of this area roughly in 2015.
That's pretty aggressive.
It is, and I'll come back and speak to that in a minute. 2015 to 2016. Unfortunately, the colors on this projector are very different than ours, so they're a bit hard to read here. But that's, I believe you have it in front of you as well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I've got it as well.
But this is the overall layout, and again, I apologize for the colors, but essentially the majority of the overall land use that's incorporated within the plan is single-family residential, single-family lots. The pale areas are various retention ponds, and so the single-family and parks and recreation spaces are linked around those. The former Fort Garry landfill site is the cross-hatched area to the west or to the left-hand side of the screen, and the multiple family sites are located along the southbound leg of Keniston Boulevard, as well as along the westerly extension of Bison Drive. What's illustrated on this plan as well are the major, are the collector streets, the residential collector streets within the subdivision and the roundabouts internal to the subdivision. And in the bottom left-hand corner in the crosshatch green area with the S is the potential school site that we've been working with the Pembina Trail School Division. We've been working with LADCO with respect to the connection of the collector streets to the LADCO lands to the south, and that school division is expected to be augmented by the LADCO application, which would also end up with a 5-acre site on the LADCO side. So collectively, there'd be a 10-acre elementary school site. I just want to speak very briefly about one of the underlying design principles that we've been working on throughout the development of the Bridgewater communities in Waverly West, and that has a lot to do with the walkability and the green space connections and walkway trails within it. Our underlying design principle that we've been working on, an objective, has to do with the healthy communities objectives in terms of urban design, and that's to promote a walkable community as one of the key principles underlying the design of the communities. There are three primary components to this: the active recreation areas, the passive recreation areas, and the overall linkages with sidewalks as well, which isn't on the here, but I'll speak about that in a minute. The active recreation areas are the sports fields that are normally incorporated in subdivisions to accommodate neighborhood youth and organized leagues and activities, whether it be soccer or softball and other similar activities. And this plan includes areas for that purpose. And in addition, what we're seeing more and more, and what certainly we've emphasized and incorporated within the plans, and they're linked to LADCO's plans as well, is the development of passive recreational trails within the subdivisions. And we are finding that more and more residents are using the trails if they're well designed and incorporated, and in fact are seen as one of the key amenities in the overall subdivision design. And when I get to the map that looks at the overall area, you'll see how these begin to link between the neighborhoods. They're not just passive trails within the neighborhood, and we'll come back to that in a minute. Again, some difficulty with the colors on the graphics here, but in terms of the overall trail network, there is an overall regional trail network that's been designed that passes through this neighborhood, which we're referring to as the Bridgewater Trails neighborhood, that ultimately is part of a concept plan that links the Assiniboine Forest and the Assiniboine Park area south through Fort White Alive, eventually through this area, and meanders its way eventually down through the Beaujolais Coulee to the La Salle River and the Red River. It's part of a very ambitious plan, but some of the key elements that are being put in place for that are the Greenway trail systems that we're incorporating within the subdivisions. And in this case, there are two components to that. The first is the north-south spine that you can see running through here, and I'll just step away from the mic for a second. So what I've just pointed to on the map is the main north-south spine that runs through the neighborhood, past the lake systems, and at the southern end swings over and runs past the school site and links down into the LADCO subdivision. There is a secondary trail to the western part of that that follows the collector street, and again I'll step away just for a second and illustrate where that is, and it ties into the other site as well at the school. So both of those larger trail systems, which are also augmented by a number of internal trail linkages to that, provide very good trail access anywhere within this community to the elementary school site, as well as good connections to the neighborhoods to the north, to the south, and to the Bridgewater Town Forest to the east, Town Center to the east. And just lastly, with respect to illustrating the area structure plan, part of the overall transportation system has been developed as well in consultation with both the Public Works Department as well as Winnipeg Transit to ensure that the collector street systems are linked to the other neighborhoods and future neighborhoods in a way that allow for good movement of traffic as well as for good circulation and bus access to the overall neighborhoods. At that point, Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to move on to the DASZ, but I can pause for a minute if there are any specific questions to the area structure plan, or we can deal with all of the questions at the end.
I'd just like to talk on the area structure plan first. The issue of road capacity, traffic capacity going in, there is no plan at this time or nothing connected to this piece for additional roads other than the extension of Keniston to the future Bison. Is that correct?
I'm not sure I understand the question in terms of future road connections. Do you mean within the arm of McDonald or future McDonald?
No. To extend, right now Keniston is only being extended in the last year's work anyway. It's only being extended to Bison, I believe, or maybe not even all the way to Bison.
The first year, right now the extension of Keniston, and again if I can just step aside. That part of the contract is currently being undertaken. The new contract that the city is working on and design concept is for the completion of Keniston in its entirety from Bishop Grandin to the south perimeter. That will be constructed in two phases in 2013 and 2014. And in 2013, the intent is to bring those legs of Bison down to South Town Road, which is the more southerly of those cross access points.
Just to bring Keniston, just one leg of Keniston down to there?
No, at that point, both legs of Keniston will be extended
both
that far.
Both legs will come all the way down.
So before we have the first occupancies, or in that same summer that we're getting the first occupancies on the houses within that area, we expect Keniston to be available from South Town Road north.
Okay, so there's no issue of connecting occupancy to the full extension of Keniston then?
Provided the city's on schedule.
Well,
I mean, we have no control over that.
To me, the two have to go hand in hand, Paul. I don't know why it's taken this long to actually get that full extension out to tender. It should have been out a long time ago. We've had the financing available, and I'm actually seeing numbers, you know, suggesting that we're pushing some increases in cost now because it's taken so long. I've lived through a bit of a traffic nightmare with the build-out already going as fast as it has on the other side. I want to make sure that we have road capacity. And I'm not worried about Bison getting pushed through, but I like the idea of having all of Keniston in place because it's going to take some pressure off of the other side, and it's going to get that traffic conditioned to using Keniston rather than cutting across to Waverly or to Pembina, going up and using Bishop Grandin or going all the way down and using Taylor or whatever. So as long as the city's on schedule, then you wouldn't have a problem with it.
No, although I would say that keep in mind by the time this develops, there will be two access points already at this point. For the Bridgewater Forest neighborhood, in the area that you're talking about, I believe that you're referring to where we had only the one access point and the secondary access has been delayed, there has been only that one access point, which is a four-lane divided entrance, but still a single access point. By the time this develops, at a minimum, the first leg of Keniston will be provided, so there will be at least two access points. And not only that, within the subdivision, there will be other alternatives. So I understand what you're saying. I'm hesitant because
but
we have
Keniston
no control
still
over that.
Keniston still won't be punched all the way through to the perimeter.
That's correct.
And we'll still be taking the traffic on the two-lane road on the other side.
Right.
At least on the south end of it.
The only difficulty I'm having with what you're suggesting is we have no control over the city schedule for the construction of Keniston. Yeah. To tie this subdivision into that gives me some concern.
Well, from what I've seen so far, we have to take a little better control of it and make sure that we're getting the infrastructure in place before we're putting letting the traffic go there.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I don't know what the holdups are in getting these projects out. It should have been out last year, at the end of the year, rather than still waiting. And it looks like we might be lucky to get it out by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some concerns about it, so we'll carry on.
Okay, and I guess in response to that, it's a little bit depending on how your concern gets expressed in wording. If it's a cap to say that until this gets done, there shall only be so many building permits issued or something to that effect, If it's that there can't be any occupancies of houses, then it becomes far more problematic in that builders and others will at that point...
I would bet you if I were to make it conditional, any issues we're having about how to access the perimeter highway would go away very quickly, if I were a betting man.
I can't comment on that. As I say, we have no control over that.
We should carry on.
All right. Well, I would hope if those conditions are added that that there will be continuous pressure put on the city's public works department and ensure that the contract is completed within
a
reasonable time frame.
I'm sure there would be continuous pressure put on the province to ensure that there's proper access, as the public works guys wanted at the perimeter highway as well.
With that, we'll move on then to the subdivision rezoning component. My slides here are relatively brief because I think we've dealt with most of the main issues, and I'll answer some questions as we come back. But as I've indicated before, the rezoning would result in mainly lower density residential lots, multiple family units along the arterial streets, approximately 2,000 dwelling units in total at full completion, and a population roughly of 4,500 to 5,000 people. In summary, sorry, we missed one. Where are the points for this today? Okay, they come up individually, sorry. In summary, Mr. Chairman, this application is consistent with our Winnipeg. It's consistent with the overall area structure plan that was adopted by the community committee. It's consistent with the previous neighborhood area structure plans that have been adopted. And it's consistent with the consultation that we've had prior with neighbors and landowners. In that respect, there's no surprises or shouldn't be in that regard. Go ahead. I would like to speak about critical timing for a minute on this, and you questioned me a minute ago about the aggressive schedule. What we're looking for in terms of approvals would be approvals this year in 2012, the initial servicing of the first phase in 2013, and the first occupancies in 2014. I think the slide that indicates full build-out 2015 may have been a typo. I think that we're looking at 2016 and possibly 2017. That's going to be market-driven in that respect. But I would like to comment on why this is such a good news story for Winnipeg. When we first appeared before this community committee several years ago and provided the community committee with our anticipated schedule and build-out for this area, we didn't anticipate being here before this committee for about two more years. The fact that we're here now in 2012 is an indication of how strong the housing market has been in Winnipeg. And the land development process is the first part of the process leading towards the builders being able to develop houses and sell those houses to families for our growing community. And there is a considerable lead time on land development. Before the point where we have an occupancy in a house, we need to start this process at least 3 years in advance from that, 3 to 4 years, and that's where we are today, looking at when those occupancies begin to occur. And so it is critical for us to see this application move forward within this time frame to allow for the servicing to begin in the early winter, February of this year, so that the first permits would be issued in the fall of next year and the first occupancies in 2014. I have submitted to the clerk. I'd like now to speak, by the way, on the planner's report and the ACG report, and I've submitted to the clerk a single page of some items, and I have not got those on the screen. I'll deal with those individually, and have those been distributed to the members? There are 9 clauses or items in the ACG or planner's report that we'd like to comment on, and I've broken those down into 3 groupings. The first are what I would simply call housekeeping issues. Those first items are typographical or errors or omissions within the report that we've met with Mr. Raven about, and the report had already been circulated to you, councillors, prior to us catching these. So I'll just walk you through those very quickly if I can. The first has to do with the length of a cul-de-sac, a maximum length of a cul-de-sac, and we would like the words added, unless secondary access is provided. There are 2 cul-de-sacs that exceed the 105 meters in length, but they have a back lane access as a secondary access for those.
Where are we in the ACG?
I'm sorry, this is...
All I have is something that says A, Part A, Clause 12. Okay, there I go. The developer will ensure that no cul-de-sac street exceeds 105 meters in length.
So we're asking the words to be, unless a secondary access is provided.
Then it wouldn't be a cul-de-sac, would it? What do we call it, a secondary access?
I think you're technically correct, Councillor, but in terms of the vernacular, people often refer to those as cul-de-sacs, even though they have a lane.
You're suggesting that you're going to do cul-de-sacs with back lanes?
Two of the cul-de-sacs have back lanes that terminate back into the cul-de-sac. Do you have a plan in front of you? I'm not sure if you have that or we can pull it up.
I've got 200 pages in front of me, Paul. Okay, I got it. Got it figured.
So are you suggesting an amendment to 12?
You're good with that, Kim?
Yes.
Okay.
We're suggesting the words be added to that clause, 12, unless a secondary access is provided.
Okay, thank you.
Second item is Part C of the ACG report, and this is clause, it can't be clause 12. I must
12 again?
I'm sorry, it is clause. The other was Part A clause. This is C clause 12. And this is really a wording issue, and it is related to how the Winnipeg Land Titles Office handles these registrations. In the previous subdivision for the Bridgewater Lakes neighborhood, we have a number of visitable houses that have trailways behind them or walkways behind the houses. But the way the plans get registered, those get registered as public lanes. And so in talking to Mr. Rabin, what we were looking for was wording here that simply clarified when the city's asking for lane pavements in areas that are identified as public lanes, that there is the ability for us to distinguish between the two. And so we're asking that wording be added to this clause in brackets.
Administration's good with that. We're good with it.
Okay. Number C, Part C, Clause 15. Add the underlined wording in the clause as follows, as and when determined by the Director of Public Works.
Good.
Honorable Chairman, the intersection of Biden and Brady, as determined by the Director of Public Works.
As and when determined.
Wording, as and when determined. As and when. We usually take money when?
On demand.
On demand. You're fine with that language? I'm not sure I like that language. If you're okay with it, I'll go with it.
Yes.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
There's three, five left. Or did you say eight or 12? It doesn't matter. Keep going.
Part C, clause 34.
Part C, clause 15. And then the last one is Part C, clause 34. Subparts C and D should read the East Boulevard rather than the West Boulevard. That was simply a typographical error or an error in description.
Okay.
I would then like to move on to the second and third comments, the five that are really our comments related to the ACG report and planner's report. And the first of these has to do with the plan of subdivision. In the process of discussions with the administration just prior to advertising, there were some concerns raised about the number of crossings on the residential streets of the active transportation trail. And if I could just approach the map for a minute and illustrate this for you.
Where?
Within this area, in the original plan, each of these residential streets connected across in this area, and each one of those crosses.
Okay, so that's just a trail, right?
It's a trail on what was proposed. If you can go to the next slide. Once we updated the traffic study, we realized in the process that as a result of severing all of those streets, we inadvertently created some other traffic issues within that area. So in discussions with the Public Works Department, what we've done is reopened that trail to a connector.
Local residential.
So just the one connection across.
One short section there.
Right.
Okay.
And that's what we're good with? Everybody's good. The transportation engineers aren't going to come along and tell us that we got to find another 100 grand for snow clearing because we did this. Okay.
They actually prefer the connection, not more
they
than
still
more than
half.
Okay. So does that? Okay. So just from a procedural perspective, then we're just approving this amended
as amended schedule.
As amended schedule B.
So that's we're no longer on the ACG here.
No.
Planner's report. Okay.
Okay, next. B.
And then the last really has some wording in the ACG report. This is Part 2B under the ACG report in Clause C. Part C, Clauses 40 and 48. There is wording with respect to a planning process called proactive and collaborative. And we've asked that those words be taken out of the ACG report. I don't have a problem with descriptive and flowery language in the planner's report, but the ACG report becomes the conditions of the development agreement. And I do have difficulty when the wording is unnecessary and it's open to interpretation.
So the central circular park space shall require a separate proactive and collaborative planning process with the city and shall require final approval of the Director of Public Works and the Director of Planning, Property and Development. Okay, so...
I'm just saying that we acknowledge there's a separate planning process, but it doesn't have to...
So what did you ask to be omitted? Which words?
Just to remove the words proactive and collaborative so that it says that there acknowledges that there's a separate planning process. And that's the words that would be picked up and included in the development agreement. Well, it may not.
Why is that note even in there?
Pardon me?
I don't know why the note is in there. Note that improvements associated with focal point type elements are not considered standard to previous phases. I don't know the notes managing the landscape, the public open spaces to standard. I'm fine with the first paragraph, I think. I don't know why we need the second paragraph. Okay? Seems like we're going into a bunch of gobbledygook we probably don't need.
Can we ask Donna?
Sure, we can ask.
Donna, we're talking. Can you come down and join us?
Donna Beaton, Parks Planner with the PP&D Department. The reason we put that clause in is in the previous clause, we referenced that they had to develop to standards as per previous development. We just wanted to clarify that if anything's done over and above, like they've done at the other focal points that had fountains, et cetera, that we needed a separate planning process to address that. That's all it was intended to identify.
So it doesn't really need to be in the ACG?
It should be. Because we need to identify that it's not, if they came forward with the same plans and the same level of development on the focal as they did on the previous, that we wouldn't consider that as standard development.
Let's get to a standard consistent with the level of development established in previous phases of Waverly West Bridgewater Park developments.
So it's kind of like saying with the exception of the focal point area, that requires if it's going to be
it doesn't say that the exception. It says landscape the public open space to a standard consistent. So it would be inclusive of all public open space, it would appear to me.
And then that next clause we're talking about right now speaks to that fact that we want at least, if something's going to be at a higher standard, there needs to be some communication. It's not just considered standard development because it was permitted in a previous application.
This isn't saying standard development. This is saying that they will do it to a level of development established in previous phases.
That clause says that. The next clause that we were talking about related to the focal point. If you read that out again, I don't have a copy.
Note that improvements associated with focal point type elements are not considered standard to previous phases as articulated in the area structure plan. Any special focus area elements that may be required for the central circular park space shall require a separate proactive. I'm fine with doing them consistent with what we've done in the previous, because it's a higher standard already.
The reason that we wanted to at least have some separate planning process is there are some higher standards and details that need to be adhered to, so we need to know what we're... The Public Works Department needs to know what they're going to be retrieving or receiving as an asset.
Okay, I get it.
Okay. Thank you, Donna. Feel free to... stay down here. We may need some more of your expertise.
Okay, item 3A.
Moving on to 3A, then, there are three items that are specific applications requests, and we had spoken to Mr. Rabin about these prior to, and he felt that it would be better if we brought these forward to the floor of council rather than to include them into floor of committee rather than to include them in the ACG report. The first is an acknowledgement, as has been the case with the other neighborhoods that have been approved by community committee. It's the developer's intent to develop, to install sidewalks on the residential streets within the neighborhood as well as the collector streets, and this would be limited to one side on the residential streets and not in the cul-de-sacs. And I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, through Mr. Raven, or to Mr. Raven, whether that how that gets addressed in here as much as it is an acknowledgement. It's not something the city is requiring as a condition of us. We are asking for permission, essentially, to install the sidewalks.
Mr. Planner, do you have any suggestions on that? Okay, Kim?
The reason it falls into the category of coming before the committee for decision, this would be that the development agreement parameters don't require sidewalks on local residential streets. And during discussion, the ACG discussion on this application, it came out that really it's more infrastructure administratively to maintain, et cetera.
So we dealt with that in the original phase. And how do we deal with that? Didn't we get?
We dealt with it actually as a test, phase, as a trial.
Well, we took some money, right?
Yes, we did take some money.
There was some way of dealing with the ongoing maintenance of it. I can't recall.
We've dealt with it in two applications. In the initial application, the Public Works Department was concerned that clearing of the sidewalks was going to be a problem, and there was some discussion about setting up a fund, et cetera. After their actual experience, once the sidewalks went in, they found Bruce McPhail, who was with the department at the time, when we got to the second application, reported that, in fact, it had not turned out to be the problem that they thought it was, and they were able to manage the sidewalk clearing when they did the street clearing. So by the time we got to the second application, there was simply an acknowledgement that the sidewalks would be included, but there was no other discussion about any other fundings.
I'm sorry, Councillor.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have to adjust that statement in that in the next phase in the DAS at 4 of 10 application just previous to this, the administration actually inserted a clause that sidewalks not be constructed on the local.
Okay, so why don't we want sidewalks instructed?
The committee overturned that decision.
Okay, so we do want sidewalks constructed.
We do not. Well, administratively.
Administratively, you don't want sidewalks constructed because they represent what you think is a cost for snow clearing and maintenance.
Yes.
Is that correct?
From the ACG perspective, now okay. The planners may have a different.
Well, I think.
I can resolve this issue when we get to that point.
Okay, Councillor Swindell is going to resolve that one. You can continue.
Okay, and just the last point to clarify that, I think there's a significance in the fact that the Public Works Department in the previous application asked that they not be included, and this time they're silent on the matter. I think what's happened is that there's been progression within the administration on acknowledging the importance of walking. So, B3B, explain this. I'll explain this a little bit more. Brady Road, which is the western boundary of this application.
Okay. Paul, did you say B through D?
No.
Oh.
3B.
3B, okay.
Item 3B. I don't think I said 3 to B. This is within the ACG report. It's clause 34 of Part C, and it has to do with the status of Brady Road. Brady Road is the western boundary of this site, but it is also the boundary road between the City of Winnipeg and the arm of McDonald. And as per the standard conditions in a development agreement, where there is a road off-site like this, the developer is usually obliged to pay for one lane of pavement. And that was done in the previous application, and it's part of the conditions of this application. We would like to suggest to the Community Committee that there may be a way of handling this that's to everybody's better benefit down the road and would avoid us having to come back through an amended development agreement. And that is that at this point we acknowledge, and I think the City Administration acknowledges as well, is that nobody has a future plan for Brady Road. A lot of it has to do with what might happen in the arm of McDonald, or ultimately, if the issue of annexation is ever resolved, whether this gets incorporated into the city's plan. So Brady Road may or may not exist eventually, or it exists, but it may or may not be improved as a major street. What we would like to do is to give the city and the administration enough latitude in the wording of this clause to say that, essentially, what we're saying is that in the event that Brady Road is not improved as a street, that in fact that financial contribution would be an opportunity would be there for us to take that financial opportunity and to spend it on improvements for the former landfill site number 24. And by improvements, I mean landscaping and sports fields improvements. That decision does not have to be made tonight by the community committee. We think that the wording that we're suggesting gives you that flexibility to revisit this at some point in the future and doesn't oblige you one way or the other.
We've been down this road before with boundary roads on developments. Waverly was, you know, South Waverly was a gravel road when Richmond West was developed, and what happens is traffic just starts using it, even though it's not meant to be the access to the development. It kind of becomes it. And even, so if we get away from taking the requirement, even though we only have somebody to pay for half of it, we can still end up with the issues down the road. We'd have the improved park, but we still wouldn't have funding for upgrading Brady Road.
I think the difference between the two scenarios is that Waverly existed and the city owned or had jurisdiction over the lands on both sides. So there was no discussion at that point that I was aware of that Waverly would ever be discontinued as a street at its northern end. It eventually has been at the southern as part of the LADCO subdivision.
Waverly was never included in the subdivision.
No, because it existed as a street. The difference and the distinction that I would make between the Waverly scenario and this scenario is that Brady is a boundary road between two municipal jurisdictions. And at this point, there's nothing in any of the planning that really talks or addresses the issue of Brady, whereas in Waverly it actually had been addressed in what was at that time the Plan Winnipeg plates that went along with it. Really what we're trying to do with this clause, Mr. Chairman, is to provide this community committee as well as the developer with the ability and the flexibility to address this issue without having to go back through an advertised public hearing to begin to have this dialogue at a later date.
Okay.
And lastly, the last item that we have, item C in the ACG report, are clauses 49 and 52. These are related to the ornamental fence that would back onto the walkway system behind the visitable lots. And the height of the fence that was approved in the prior application, the DASZ4 of 2010, was for a 1.5-meter high fence, which is 5 feet. And in this application, the wording from the administration is 1.22 meters, and we would like that amended to 1.5, not only to be consistent with what was proposed and approved previously, but also in terms of the function of the area, we think that's the appropriate height. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will conclude my submission and ask that those amendments be considered in your consideration of the overall applications, and certainly can answer or prepare to answer any other questions that may that you may have.
Thank you, Paul. Are there any other questions?
I'm going to save my questions for rebuttal time.
Okay.
We'll hear from whoever else is here.
I have a question, or Councillor Mays, do you have any?
Yeah.
Earlier there was a picture of the hatched area over the former landfill site. What are the plans with that that area?
For the area structure plan, the area structure plan includes that area and identifies it as the former landfill site, but it is not part of the DASZ.
Okay.
That is, it's city-owned land. The current zoning is an agricultural zoning on it that would remain. We had discussions with the city administration about whether it should be included and rezoned to PR, and it was concluded at that time that that was premature to do that. So at this point, the intent with respect to that landfill site would be to clean the top of it up and put a clay cap on it and leave it as it is for now. But part of what we would like to do is begin a dialogue about its future use, and comes back to the discussion we just had about the possibility of redirecting some of the developer commitments that otherwise would have been sitting in an account for the next 20 or 30 years until Brady is dealt with, potentially 20 or 30 years, and allow us to redirect some of that to improvements for sports facilities within the landfill site.
Could I just follow that up,
Dr.? Yeah, go ahead.
Has anybody done an estimate of the site remediation?
As you recall, we had to deal with two landfill sites in the Waverly West area. The other one was in the first neighborhood. It was a much smaller site. That was the one beside the police firing range and this site. And in fact, after some earlier study, we came back to this community committee and with a plan to decommission the previous landfill site. The materials were hauled to the Brady landfill site and that site was incorporated within the subdivision. This is a much larger site and much deeper, and the remediation costs would run into several millions of dollars and beyond what we felt was reasonable to be able to look at another kind of land use for this. And so it was considered. What we have done is undertaken an environmental monitoring program around the landfill site. We have a number of monitoring test probes that are encircling the site, and we've been monitoring those for the last year, and fortunately are coming up with very low readings, which means there's very little off-site leachate or methane gas coming out of the site. So because of that, we've concluded it should just remain as is, at least the old, not disturb the old landfill.
What's the estimate of the costs on of the obligation on Brady Road?
I think in total, if I'm not mistaken, and Jim may be able to help me on this one, we looked at two parts. One was the obligation that would come out of this application. The other was that there was also an obligation under the previous application that had already been approved. And I think the total, is Jim here? Pardon me? That was the cost of remediating the landfill site. What was our obligation with respect to the Brady Road improvements, the one lane on Brady Road? Pavement of Brady Road. It was 1.2, I think, overall, in that order of magnitude.
Okay.
1.2 or 750,000? No, it was 1.2, I think.
And the green band around the landfill is park space?
That will be park space. It is a buffer around the landfill itself, and that's the area that we've been doing the testing in, and so far the testing has been coming up clean, but that would be active recreational facilities. And we have done a layout for the Parks Department of what that would look like. I actually have a slide if you want to get into the details, but that is suitable and big enough for full-sized soccer pitches, medium-sized soccer pitches,
great,
and a couple of baseball diamonds.
Great. And I noticed the area center, the town center, is PR1, so that's going to be a passive-type park? Right in the middle, surrounded by the lakes.
That will be a passive park, and earlier on the discussion that Donna was having with respect to the focal point, as part of the overall subdivision, that's also the cross pathways of the two active transportation trails, so it's the intent of doing something visual within that area that became a bit of a focal point or a heart of the community as a visual focal point.
Yep. Could see great opportunity there. Okay, thank you, Paul. Any other questions? Hearing none. Oh, Councillor Mays? Excuse me, Paul. There's a question for Councillor Mays.
Sorry, Councillor.
Potential site for the K to 8 school. Is there a potential site for a future high school? Or just the school site is just for K to 8?
This particular site would be a K to 8 site. I don't know if you've followed what's been happening, but Councillor Swindell has. When we did the original plan for the Waverly West area, the intent was to have six residential neighborhoods and six elementary schools and eventually one regional high school somewhere in this area. Those plans have changed somewhat. The school division is now looking at doing four elementary schools but one regional high school site, and that is yet to come in one of the future neighborhoods.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go down the list. And you're welcome to come down and make a presentation, or you can just register your support or your opposition. Of course, Misty Carson was with Paul in support. In support, Spencer Curtis. Thank you. James Gallagher in support. Jerry Trottier in support. Thank you. Also in support, Matthew Yan. Frank Spazzano in support. Thank you. Adul Chris. Thank you. Chris Baker. Thank you. Donovan Taves. Oh, I'm sorry, for information. Okay. Yes.
I also received communications from 12 individuals in support of the application.
Okay, via email.
By email.
Is there anybody else in support who hasn't filled out a form? Okay, now we'll go to the for information, of course, Donovan Tays for information, and for information, Michael Carruthers. Okay. I think we've covered the whole room. Is there anybody else who's either in support or in opposition hasn't filled out one of these? Back to Paul McNeil.
Back to Paul. Paul, now it's time to get down to business. Kim, the 1.5-meter wrought iron fence, you're fine with that? As opposed to 1.2?
The only reason we recognized when we were writing the report that the previous did say 1.5, but because the administration had originally asked for 1.2, we thought to be consistent in our ask, because we had reasons for it, we should ask and leave it to the discretion of council or in community committee to make a change.
Okay, so there's no issue with 1.5?
We can live with it.
If they want 1.5, you can live with 1.5.
Okay. Just to note, that gets duplicated in the zoning agreement. So for item 2A4 of the zoning agreement, it should be changed to 1.5 from 1.22.
Great.
Okay. I got a few things here. I'm trying to understand on the school site. You've got a school site requirement of 5 acres on here, but you say it's part of a 10-acre school site. Just technically, I'm wondering, like, how do we just call it school site, that's it? How do we know that the other 5 is going to come?
We would be satisfied if the second neighborhood, whatever happens on that one, the second school site doesn't get developed. We still have this one. And Pembina Trails, of course, has a final option of either developing the school site or declaring a surplus. I don't think the latter is really likely because they've already
configured this. Okay, so the phases that we've got built so far at a 5-acre school site in, I think, in the first phase that was developed at a 5-acre school site.
Seven acres in the first.
7 acres, and they've decided now that that's not going to be built on.
That's correct.
Correct. So we've got a development that's moving faster than it than we anticipated. We've now got a 5-acre site here that's being proposed as part of a 10-acre school concept.
Yes.
And that's the only school that's being built in the whole rest of it, or is there another school site somewhere else?
There's a school site north of this in the Bridgewater Lakes subdivision, which was the second. Can we go back right to the beginning?
How big is that school site?
It's a 5-acre site, but adjacent to a 10-acre city park site. I'm just going to take you back to there, that one, back one.
Okay.
Outdoor recreational facilities. But what has happened is that the school division has decided that they want 10-acre sites for themselves, independent of the joint use opportunities, as they move forward. So what they've told us their plans are is to abandon the site in the Bridgewater Forest neighborhood. That was the first neighborhood. That was the 7-acre site, which is what they had identified to us at the time as their requirements. When we proposed the second neighborhood, they were fine with the 5-acre site combined with the 10-acre site with the city, so a total of 15. They originally had wanted to abandon that as well, but after discussions with them, they concluded, in fact, they could work with that, and this site, rather than being more central to the neighborhood, should be on the southern boundary, combined with Ladcos. There's a little bit of good faith anticipated in all of this, and it's the same
I've
as when we...
I've been down this good faith road with these guys before.
Well, I say that in the extent
of... running thin. Yeah. What I see here is really no plan for schools. We've got a development that's moving faster than anticipated. We're anticipating up to 4,500 more people here by 2016, let's say. No plans to build a school. The original school site is 7 acres, has been abandoned, but nobody's dealt with the issue that that's going to create in that neighborhood. Is there a school being built in the Bridgewater Lakes neighborhood anytime in the near future?
Councillor, I can't speak on behalf of the school division, and they are not necessarily sharing all of their plans with us. Certainly this application has triggered an awful lot more discussion about their planning for the whole area. But part of what they've indicated to us is that they're intending to bus kids out of the Waverly West area for some time in the future because they have surplus capacity in other schools. That's something that we really can't do with. We can,
so
we can,
there'd be those schools that just asked to be allowed to put eight temporary classrooms at? Okay. I don't think they have that capacity, Paul, but if they want to represent right. that's fine.
Councillor, in fairness to the industry and ourselves and LADCO and to your own administration, this has also been very frustrating for us to get clear.
I understand that. The dilemma I face is that I sit here adjudicating over a land development application. Schools are part of land development. I don't care what anybody says or how we want to play around with the semantics of that. You know, where do I draw the line? Where do I say I'm not going to let you punch more traffic into Waverly Heights because you're trying to be so fiscally prudent you're forgetting that there's children that need to be educated in their own communities? Where do I draw the line? I got a hammer right now. I can say, no, you can't build another house until you build a school. I'll guarantee you a school will be built pretty damn quick. So, I mean, where do I draw the line is all I'm saying. I got it there with schools. I got it on that road with the extension of Keniston.
As part of the original adoption of the area structure plans, there is wording in the area structure plan that identifies the intent to have an elementary school in each of the six residential neighbourhoods. We have pointed out, and your administration has pointed out to the school division, that if they are now taking a different direction and are now looking at a four-school model rather than a six-school model, then it's their responsibility and it's incumbent upon them to initiate a public consultation process that opens this issue up for discussion within the neighbourhood. But they're going to have to drive that one, not ourselves. We are in a position of having to respond to what their requests are, whether we necessarily agree with them or not. It would certainly be harmful to our industry if the, when I say our industry, I'm speaking on behalf of the development industry and the house building industry, to have this application laid over until the school division is resolved, because that could take a long time.
I wouldn't lay it over. I would make it a condition that some sort of school be provided that's not imposing on the other communities and that's actually recognizing the growth and the rate that it's happening. I don't know how long it takes to build a school. I'm thinking it's a couple of years at least to get, you know, figure out the design and get everything built. It's at least 2 years. That would be the quickest it could be done. I don't think government's done anything in 2 years. So you're probably looking at 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have 4,500 more people living there and no guarantee that we're going to have a school. And I think we've got to address this problem. I think we need to figure out a way that we could continue to move forward, but that somebody's building a bloody school. Because the traffic situations that it's going to create, they can say bus all day long, all they want, but we all know that every, you know, loving mother and father is going to want to drive their grade one child to their first day of school and probably continue to do it every day after that. And those schools in those other neighborhoods aren't built to have, you know, 10,000 people from Waverly West coming into them. Mm-hmm. And I think we got to do something. So I don't know. You know, at some point I'll make some kind of a decision by the end of getting through all of this stuff here. But we got the old school site issue that's going to be a storm to deal with at some point because it's currently zoned already, I think, if I remember correctly. It's zoned for multifamily.
No, it's zoned for
single family.
Yes.
But if somebody's going to develop that land, then they should be standing up and saying they're going to build on that land, that it's not going to be a school site.
The developer still owns the land. The school division gets an option on the property. That option has not yet expired, and the school division hasn't formally advised the developer that they're planning to drop their options. So the developer can't really start a new process until the school division drops
their option. But we're all talking about entities that are controlled by the provincial government here, aren't we?
No, the school divisions are independent of the provincial government. They receive their funding for capital projects through the Public Schools Finance Board, but decisions like this are really driven at the school division level, as I understand the system.
I think they would get a lot of pressure from the provincial government if we were to make certain things conditional, and we might actually see things happen. Mm-hmm. And because if the provincial government is saying, or the school board is saying, that they're giving up on the piece of land as school, and that's what's being represented here today, then give up on the piece of the land. If you're telling me now that they haven't given up on the piece of land, then I don't think we should be having this conversation today.
I think they have said publicly their intent is not to build a school. I think there was an article in the paper about 6 weeks ago to that effect. But as far as I know, and I can confirm through my client, as far as I know, they have not formally dropped their option, which is written into, for the first neighborhood, is written into the terms of the development agreement.
If I was to put some controls in with regards to the the road work, the Keniston extension and getting some more road capacity done, if I was to limit to 300 multifamily units and 750 single-family dwelling units until those things were done, do you think that would give enough time?
Can you define what those improvements would be? Do you mean Keniston?
I want the full extension of Keniston completed.
I think we could live with that.
Okay.
You okay with that, Jim?
Now, the last subdivision that you did had some visitable housing in it as well, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And you're proposing the same thing in this?
Yes, we are.
You'll recall that I tried to wrestle a couple of lots out for St. Amant to do some community-based housing for their clients in that neighborhood, and nothing came to fruition.
I'm aware of that, yes.
Actually, I was quite disgusted by the whole process and that people could just abandon those families like that. I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see two lots out of here go to St. Amant Center to have the type of housing that these communities should have when you're building visitable housing, and to make sure that these people are getting looked after and not treated the way they were treated the last time. That was abhorrent. And I know it wasn't you. I know that was more of a, you know, it came from the provincial government. But I, you know, we have an opportunity here. You're asking us to be flexible on a whole bunch of things here. I'm trying to find ways to get things done. I need to find two lots in here that are going to go to St. Amant Center for the provision of their client housing. And I'm going to make that a condition. And you can wrestle and argue with somewhere else if you want, but it's going in tonight as a condition, because I'm not letting anybody do what they did in that last phase to those families. And without them coming forward and giving what they should have given the last time.
Councillor, could I suggest, in terms of your wording on the condition, I think one of the things that the province wrestled with respect to giving the lots to the St. Amant Centre specifically was...
Well, they don't need to think about wrestling or anything anymore. I'll take care of the wording. If some lawyers want to argue over it and beat these families up again, they can do that. But I'll do my part tonight.
So... Councillor, on that issue, I'm assuming that you've made the connections with St. Amant and there.
It'll all happen. It'll be fine. That's all the questions I have.
Yeah. Councillor Mays.
Just one question. As Councillor Swandell said, he's got that Division Scolaire, Franco-Manitoba school that's putting in portables. You know, we seem to have excess capacity with Pembina Trails.
No, that's the other... school is in Waverly Heights. That's not the one that...
But you've got a school, you've got a DSFM school.
Nothing nowhere near this.
State Park. My point is, if there's excess land, if Pembina Trails isn't using land, has there been any discussion with the other school division? If they're putting people in portables, they may want...
Oh, they're putting people in portables everywhere.
Right.
Like two different divisions, though, we're talking.
Yeah, but this is nowhere near where those other portables are going. Those other ones are way out to St. Norbert.
Oh, well, as you know... DSFM schools of huge catchment areas. I would suspect there'll be some demand. So any contact between you may not know if Pembina Trails has contacted DSFM in terms of the other school sites.
There have been a number of discussions regarding this issue, and I think all I can say is that it's been ongoing, but I think our ability to influence that is very, very limited as the developers at this point, and we've sort of gone as far as we can. Their plans are certainly not consistent with the overall concept for the Waverly West area, and it's certainly caused some issues with respect to planning. Sure. What you have in front of you is considered to be a reasonable compromise that all parties, that is developers, ourselves and LADCO, as well as the school division felt would work to their best interest, and the Public Schools Finance Board was part of that dialogue and discussion. But in terms of using capacity elsewhere in the school system, that's way beyond our terms of mandate or what we can address through this process.
Anything else, Councillor Mays?
I think.
Okay. I don't think we have any more questions. So, Councillor Swandell, are you ready for
I'm
motions?
Good to go.
Councillor is good
right
to go.
Page here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
OK.
Okay, so all the requested amendments are on the zoning agreement side. There's nothing in the...
First you have to deal with the area structure.
Right, that's what I'm trying to figure out. There's nothing in the area structure plan, right?
There's the three replacement maps. Paul identified the addition of a road connecting east and west side. It changed one small aspect of the concept maps you have before you.
You got to come and show us, because the only road connection I saw was in the zoning piece.
And what you actually see is the absence of a park connection. There was originally showing a
that's in the zoning,
piece.
Though. That's in the...
This is only in the area structure plan. You can see it better here. This piece of road, they added eliminating a green corridor, which was originally on these same maps. So we see the absence of that green corridor.
So that's a simple motion.
Can we just get Paul back for a quick... Secondary, well, because we need to know how to amend it in the area structure plan.
I add these electronically. I'll replace these. Recommend that they be replaced
with
these.
But those aren't showing the road. Like, they don't show the PR.
The concept maps don't show any of the local roads. All they show is the park space and the collectors. So what we're seeing is one piece.
So
of
this gets done. What is the intent of these lots and that one road going across there? Okay.
Paul, I don't think we need you. Do we need Paul?
No,
do you have a
question? I think we're good.
We've resolved it. Thank you.
I'll move that the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
All in favor? Contrary, carried.
That the receipt of public consultations be concluded.
All in favor? Contrary, carried.